today. The best books, TV shows, and music. Our critics answer your questions about how to pass the time in an extended lockdown. Is there one thing you've started doing more of since lockdown began? Amar, I don't know if you want to go first.
I've been gaming a bit, actually, which I know a lot of my friends have been doing.
What games have you been playing?
I mean, I've been doing the basic thing and playing Animal Crossing.
Another week of lockdown begins, and for many of us, this means finding new ways to keep ourselves entertained and amused. After 4 weeks, this can feel like a struggle.
I'm really ashamed to say that I've made a sourdough starter and I nursed it lovingly for a week, and I have made 2 loaves of the worst bread in the world.
But today, 3 of The Guardian's culture critics are here to give you their recommendations for how to pass the time during this extended period of self-isolation. We'll delve into the Netflix back catalogue with Animal Crossing fan and TV critic Amar Kalia, listen to songs chosen by deputy music editor and talented baker Laura Snapes, and Guardian Books online editor Sian Kane shares what she's reading right now when she's not gaming.
I've done a lot of shooty games. I'm like the opposite of Amar, basically. I haven't had the peaceful Animal Crossing utopia that a lot of people are doing at the moment.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, what to watch, read and listen to as lockdown continues. All of us and everyone listening is living through a time that is very difficult for everybody in different ways. And so I think the most obvious place to start with your recommendations is for things that might just make us feel a bit happier during low moments. And Laura, I was going to start with you. What music can you suggest that might cheer us all up a bit?
I think it's been a really good few weeks for big pop music, you know, the sort of fantastical, highly produced stuff that is just the opposite of sitting with a duvet over your head on the computer. The new Dua Lipa album came out called Future Nostalgia, which does a pretty good job of summing up the vibe of it. It's quite disco, but it's very like ruthless modern pop songwriting as well. It's really satisfying. There's a British-Japanese pop star called Rina Sawayama who had a really brilliant single called Comme des Garçons a few weeks ago.
Sounds like what you're saying there is actually pop tends to be the thing that can put us in a good mood.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's just so escapist and it's the opposite of sloping around your house with no bra on and your pyjama trousers. It's like a vision from another world at the moment. If you want something a bit more muted, the new Waxahachie album is like really beautiful Americana. And I've been listening to quite a lot of Mary Lattimore, who's this brilliant harpist.
Sian, we had a question from Amanda on Twitter, and she wanted recommendations for funny novels, books that can cheer the reader up. And I wondered if you had any that you thought fitted that description.
For sure. I think there's quite a lot of really funny classics that people may not necessarily think are funny before having read them. For example, I actually only read my first ever Nancy Mitford novel last year, and I was so delighted by how funny it was and how contemporary it felt. Then there's authors like David Sedaris, who's always really, really funny to me. Also, lots of people are rereading Terry Pratchett at the moment, who's a fantastic comic author, but I'd really recommend the collaboration he did with Neil Gaiman, which is called Good Omens, and it's all about the end of the world, which feels very topical for the moment, but it's really, really funny.
Have some people been using the term pandemlet?
Yeah, I know. I've got to say, I hate all of these evolutions of putting lit into things. Corona lit, lockdown lit. Yeah, I think a lot of people are coping with it in different ways. Some people really just don't want to read any of that. And then there's some people that are driving Albert Camus' The Plague to the top of the bestseller charts. And no one way is right.
Those people whose approach to life is like, if I'm in a pandemic, I'm really in a pandemic. I'm going to do this pandemic properly.
Yeah, exactly.
Amar, what TV could we be watching that might lighten the load a bit?
I think this is a really good time to get into those sort of 20 to 30 minute comedies where there's plenty of them available. I mean, I've been quite liking getting into nostalgic stuff like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which I used to watch when I got home from school. which is now all on Netflix. And I find that watching those 20-minute episodes, they transport you to another place. Mid-90s, big clothes, ridiculous jokes, young Will Smith. It's just all quite fun. And I suppose in terms of like new stuff, I know Laura's a fan of this because she's interviewed him, but there's this American comedian, Joe Pera. He's got this really great show on, I think it's on All4, called Joe Pera Talks With You, where it's just really slow, meditative, soothing.
Eggs. Bacon. Melon. Muffin.
Little vignettes of him planting beans in his garden or discovering the Who, which sounds quite dry, but is actually very, very funny. The pacing is really excellent. It's really different, I think, from anything else that's around at the moment. So that's worth getting into, I think, if you're maybe feeling a bit anxious and stressed.
Hello. My name is Joe Pera, and I think breakfast rocks, dude.
We've all got a lot more time on our hands at the moment. So maybe this is an opportunity for us all to indulge in those classics that we've promised ourselves we'll sit down and listen or watch or read. What classic books would you suggest we should be dusting off right now?
I think some people have a very slim framework for what a classic is. And I like to remind people that things like Lord of the Rings is a work of classic literature, and it's absolutely brilliant and thrilling and transporting, and I really love fantasy and sci-fi.
Paul on Twitter actually asked for your suggestions for a long read for isolation, and Sian, I'm currently looking at a copy of Middlemarch, which I've been meaning to sit down with for a really long time.
One thing I would say for a lot of classics, so for George Eliot, for example, Middlemarch was initially published, I think, in 8 2-monthly installments, and a lot of classics, so a lot of Dickens was published as installments, and also Dumas as well. A lot of these books were written to be read that way. So I think you shouldn't feel like you have to tackle too much at the same time. You can also go for like a series. I think a lot of people feel strange about revisiting children's books, but if you loved the Chronicles of Narnia, for example, why not go back and try them again?
Amar, you know, is this the time I watched an episode and a half of Game of Thrones years ago and I've never gone any further. Is this the time that I watch all of Game of Thrones, or are there other classic series that we should be watching now we've got the time to do so?
I mean, I don't really like Game of Thrones, actually.
I didn't love it.
It's maybe sacrilege. But I mean, what I was going to suggest is The Sopranos is genuinely just so good, and James Gandolfini is amazing in it.
It's a good looking kid. Show is yours.
The characters are all really well built. I think it's like 7 or 8 seasons long, and you become kind of engrossed in what's happening to them. People get whacked all the time, so it kind of keeps you going. The food is just incredible as well. Like, if you're not going to watch it for anything else, watch it for the sandwiches, because it's just really good inspiration there for your quarantine cookery.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food.
Laura, what classic albums would you suggest people might want to dig out at the moment? Have you got any recommendations?
I guess it's so subjective what you might want to go for at the moment. We did start a new series on the music section last week, which we're calling Listener's Digest. We thought that people might have finally time on their hands to be like, oh, I've always meant to get into Dylan or the Pet Shop Boys or whatever. And so this series is meant to service that. So we give you like the key album to listen to, the three to go to next, and then one for the heads. So far we've had Fiona Apple. Alice Coltrane. Curtis Mayfield. Kraftwerk. Trying to do a really varied spread of artists. So hopefully one of those might kind of remind you of something that you've been meaning to get into for ages. I've been listening to a lot of Neil Young's On the Beach. I didn't really put it on for any reason apart from the fact that I like it. There's one lyric that keeps sticking out every time I listen to it, where he sings, I need a crowd of people, but I can't face them day to day, which is quite bleak and apocalyptic.
But I can't face them day to day.
Okay, so on the one hand, you could return to an old favourite or a classic, but I also thought this time is also a good opportunity to try something a bit different. Amar, is this the time to start exploring beyond those shows that usually get recommended to us on Netflix or Amazon Prime?
Yeah, definitely. A recent thing that I think got overlooked, which was a real shame, was the new Watchmen series, which had Regina King in it, which is like a complete retelling of the comic book. It's really, really weird.
We are no one. We are everyone. And we are invisible.
Quite dark, but also quite funny in parts. Very surreal. It's basically set in this alternate universe after the actual Watchmen comic book has taken place. And it's about this detective investigating a spate of white supremacist killings.
I guess we have ourselves a reckoning.
It sounds very dark.
It is pretty dark, but it is very addictive still. And visually, it's just stunning. I mean, the opening sequence is completely incredible. It'll be on Sky and it'll be on Now TV as well.
Laura, is this the time to start listening perhaps to some Czech prog rock or Peruvian folk music or something you'd never usually try?
This is where I really have to pay tribute to Amar, who, as well as working on our TV desk, is our global music columnist, and his column turns me on to so much stuff. He wrote a review of, I think, a Ugandan DJ, you correct me if I'm wrong, called DJ Diaki last month. He has an album called Balani Fu, and Amar quite accurately described it as sounding like a panic attack. It's pretty harsh and overwhelming, and I appreciate a lot of people might not want that right now, but it's invigorating in the same way that getting a rough toweling is invigorating. When you're kind of several weeks deep into isolation malaise, it might wake you up a bit. But for something a bit less aggressive, I really like this Bristol group called the Tara Clerkin Trio, who put out an EP under that name earlier this year. It's got lots of like soft horn parts and refracted vocal harmonies. It will not make you feel like you're having a panic attack.
And Sian, with all this time that we've got where we might be returning to classics or looking for new things, Harry got in touch to ask about what this might do to our attention spans and whether being on lockdown might improve them. And he also asked, if he's 150 pages into a book but he can't really bear to go any further, should he try to persevere or should he just give up with it?
Well, I know a lot of people struggling to read at the moment, even people that are usually big readers. A lot of people have been saying that they're struggling to get through like 10 pages a day when they normally read about 100. So I don't think our attention spans are going to necessarily improve from having, say, an extra couple hours in the day that we're not using to commute. I think that there are just so many factors that are negatively affecting people's attention spans, like the constant developments in the news and the rejigging of our schedules to fit in opportunistic trips to the shops and daily exercise. But I would say that I think reading is a habit, and I think it's an enjoyable one, but it's a habit, and you can train yourself to do it. And when everything is up in the air in terms of our schedules, you can insert a new habit into your day. So I do think if you want to be someone that is a reader, inverted commas, this is the time to try and develop that habit right now. As for sort of giving up on books, I think if Harry's enjoying the book but his attention span is a bit short at the moment, he should just put it on pause and maybe revisit it later on. But if it's the book's problem, I'm very unromantic about these things, just ditch it.
After this, our critics select their favourite new releases and reflect on what post-corona culture might be like. But first, I wanted to thank all of you for your support. In times of global crisis, trusted news is more important than ever, and Guardian journalists, including our Today in Focus team, are committed to bringing you accurate, reliable news. You can help us to provide the quality information the world needs by supporting The Guardian. Just go to www.theguardian.com/support podcasts. Thank you. It feels for all of us at the moment like a lot of areas of our life are coming to a halt. All the shops and businesses that we like to visit and use are closed at the moment. But people are still making new things and releasing work. Amar, what new shows have we got to look forward to at the moment?
Something that's kind of continuing is called Trigonometry, which I thought was like a really great oddball drama, which has been on BBC Two, which is about thruple, which is probably not something that most people have come across.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's basically about three people that enter into a relationship with each other there's a couple, Gemma and Kieran, who are living in London, struggling to pay the rent.
I don't want to lodge her.
Hi!
Their relationship is falling apart because they're working all the time, and they decide to take in a lodger, this French girl called Ray.
I cannot not feel what I feel.
And then the three of them basically fall in love. And it's about how they navigate that. But it's filmed really interestingly, normally with a single camera. So it's got this really intimate, experimental vibe about it. And yeah, I just think the performances are really great. And I guess the last thing I would say is something quite oddball, which is the Limmy show. It's a Scottish comedian called Limmy, Brian Limond. I guess he got quite big on Vine, sort of doing really short bursts, comic sketches, and now has his own like cult online following. But he's got this thing called the Limmy's Homemade Show, where it's just him with a camera and a green screen, essentially, doing really, really strange sketches. Like in the first episode, there's one about making a cup of tea.
I'm about to make myself a cup of tea. And I was about to do something that I sometimes do when I make myself a cup of tea. And that is, I like to see if I can chuck the tea bag and get it in the teacup, like for a distance. I sometimes say to myself, see if this goes in, everything's going to be all right.
But it's like very, very dry, funny humour.
Yes!
And Sian, what new books are you excited about at the moment?
So one of them is Exciting Times by Neisha Dolan. She's a young Irish author and it's a novel. I mean, Amar's just explained what a thruple is. This is a version of a thruple, except it's basically about a young Irish woman who's in Hong Kong and she starts going out with a rich English guy who's working as a banker there. And then when he goes back to London, they're not really in a relationship. It's very ambiguous. So she doesn't really know where she stands with him. And when he goes back to London, she starts dating another wealthy Hong Kong lawyer who is a woman. And it's sort of about her balancing these two relationships while both of these people don't know about the other. And then there comes a point where they're all back in Hong Kong together and they have to sort of live with each other. And it's really, really fun. It's probably the best depiction I've seen of both what like a polyamorous dynamic might be like, but also just a very good depiction of bisexuality as well, which we don't necessarily see. And there's also another great book, which I'm super excited about, called Sounds Like Titanic by Jessica Cicchetto Hindman. And this is a memoir. Jessica was an aspiring violinist and she was hired to play for this New York ensemble. But it turned out that the composer that was leading the ensemble, it was actually a hoax and they didn't play their instruments. They played a CD on stage.
No.
And all of their audiences were like enraptured by this ensemble and they're like, oh, the music was brilliant. But everyone was just pretending to play instruments on stage. And it's this really great story of this young woman who sort of thinks she's found what she wants to do. And then it's all revealed to be a complete falsification. She starts asking questions about what is success and does she go along with it because she's insecure about herself. It's really, really good.
That's amazing.
That's just recently out.
Now we're all stuck indoors. We're having to find new ways to access the events that we'd usually like to go to. Laura, how are artists still performing for fans during lockdown?
I think before the lockdown properly started, we were seeing quote-unquote gigs taking place in gig venues but with no audiences. But I think as we've gone on lockdown and staff at those venues cannot justify being there, those have kind of vanished now. So I think we're seeing quite a lot of home performances, like Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie has been doing nightly concerts and I think taking requests.
The darkest country road.
Christine and the Queens started out the lockdown by doing something nightly, but I think now it's a bit more sporadic.
It's just that me, myself and I.
I mean, just to be slightly dystopian about it, I really worry about the pressure on artists to feel like they have to perform for people for free during this period because they're probably experiencing exactly the same sort of stress as everybody else. And there's such a wealth of content out there already, as I guess we've showed. I don't know how much more we do need, but if people are getting stuff out of it and the artists don't feel like they're under pressure to do it, then I guess it's not hurting anyone.
But there are a lot of artists who are under pressure, aren't they, to make money. And this is an incredibly difficult time for so many people in the industry. So is there a way for people to be able to support their favourite bands financially to help them get through this?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to buy merchandise, buy albums, look and see if they've got like an online tip jar type thing, if they are doing any sort of streaming. If you really care about an artist, streaming their music is giving them nothing. Go and spend 10 quid on their latest album if you're able to do that. I mean, bigger artists I think would be fine, but I think smaller artists, they would have offered quite specific guides of how best to support them during this time. So just have a look on their social channels to see what they're talking about.
Finally, one of our listeners, Hilary, got in touch to say that global crises in the past have often led to cultural revolutions. What are your predictions for post-corona culture?
I think we'll get a huge amount of coronavirus-related fiction and non-fiction being rushed out. But I think the best books we're going to see are going to be a while in the making. The best ones will be focused on people and the smaller implications of this whole experience. I would say, though, that I do hope that people are willing to look back on this experience and pick apart the structures that were underlying a lot of the decisions being made by governments and billionaires and people with power, and the decisions made about who was left behind and who was propped up. So I do think that this is a very good time right now to be doing a lot of nonfiction reading. And I would say that I really hope that people emerge from this experience a little bit more aware about some of these structures that hold up our societies. And I just say that I really recommend, I've just finished reading it, Winners Take All by Anand Giharadas. I think that's a really important book to read right now and just understand what role or not billionaires are playing right now.
Laura, your predictions, if you have any.
I think in pop, you know, anxiety and solitude and like the breakdown of community has been underpinning a lot of popular music for quite a while now. And I think that we're going to start seeing like a reflexive response to all of that. Last year, Frank Ocean was saying that he doesn't really want to make vulnerable music anymore. He wants to make more fantastical stuff. The new Lady Gaga album, which was supposed to be out in April, but has now been pushed back a bit, that is all based in fantasy. And I think we might almost see like a roaring 20s style, fantastical, indulgent, high production value, big pop renaissance, which we've not really had for about 7 to 10 years, maybe. All the things that you can't really do at home, I think that escapist thing people are going to be really into. But then, you know, at the same time, obviously all the tours and all the festivals have been cancelled. Really big artists have already rebooked their spots in arenas and stuff for next year. And I think there's almost going to be a whole lost year where artists, they don't have space to exhibit their work. And then once that space kind of is opened up again, it's already going to have been taken up by artists who have got a lot more power than them. And I think that we're going to see so much more attention paid to inequality within the music industry. You know, there's been a lot of pressure on Spotify recently to up their royalty rates to artists during this crisis because they're getting rich off people who are sitting home unable to tour, which we've been told for a long time is like the lifeblood of the industry. I think that is a fallacy that's really been shown up recently. And so I think there's going to be a lot more pressure on powerful parts of the industry to compensate artists properly and greater awareness of, again, like Sian was saying, the structures that are sort of underpinning it.
Amar, could we be watching endless pandemic shows this time next year? What do you think might happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, what's going to happen to Holby City? I don't know. But
the big question.
I really wonder whether soaps, the kind of day-to-day soaps like EastEnders, Emmerdale, Coronation Street, that kind of thing, whether they're going to actually address coronavirus at all, because they've all stopped production now, or they're winding down production. So they'll either kind of continue as normal, or it'll be interesting to see whether real life seeps back in. There's themes in TV that will forever continue. So period dramas will always be popular. Wartime dramas will always be there. Julian Fellowes will continue his same brand of whatever he does. So I think that will all carry on. Hopefully people will be spending this time seeking out new, interesting things to see. And then we'll take that curiosity forward when we come out of lockdown and hopefully have more of an open mind towards what it is they watch and what they would usually choose to go back to. And I think just on a wider note, I guess agreeing with what Sian and Laura are saying, is that if anything, this just shows us how valuable the arts are and how horribly underfunded they've been in this country for such a long time. You know, we need to rethink that now coming out, because artists, creators, writers, directors, everyone, they are going to need more help. And if that's been a thing getting you through your isolation and lockdown, then I think it's something that needs to be remembered when we're back to normal, or whatever normal is going to be.
Laura, Sian and Amar, thank you so much for speaking to me and for answering all of those questions.
Thank you.
No thanks. Worries,
thank you.
You can find a full list of Amar, Sian and Laura's recommendations on the webpage for this episode, and do read their reviews of TV shows, books and music at theguardian.com. Thanks to all of them for speaking to me and to you for listening. Today's episode was produced by Courtney Youssef and the sound design was by Ian Chambers. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back with you tomorrow.